This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome, listeners from 164 countries worldwide. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Jason Hartman, and today we are going to talk about a variety of things. We're not even going to say that this is an intro for another guest, because we always go so long when we do that, when we just chit-chat, even when it's just the three of us, me, myself, and I. Even then, we go too long. So today we've got Naresh with me. And of course, Naresh has been on the show. If you attended our Orlando property tour a few months back, you probably met him in person. And we are going to talk about some geopolitical stuff. We're going to talk about some frequently asked investor questions. And I don't know. And we're going to talk about waiting to have kids. Well, I don't even think Naresh knows I'm going to talk about that. But I saw an interesting article. We talk a lot about demographics on this show. And we talk about the graying of America and really the graying of the world and how that impacts real estate investors. We talk about Gen X, Gen Y, the baby boomers, the maturers, as they're called. That's sort of a hard word to say, isn't it? We'll dive into some stuff that hopefully you will find interesting today in the place known as the Island of Tranquility compared to other parts of the world. That is the United States, a very special market in which to invest in real estate. Naresh, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jason. It's been a couple of months, so it's good to be back.
It has. And you just returned from India, where I saw a monkey following you around. This monkey was literally putting its hands in your pocket like the pickpocket known as inflation. You see how I make everything a monetary comparison? Trying to get a bag of chips on a bridge in India, right?
Yep. I was in the land of Rishikesh, India. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the Beatles and I think Leonardo DiCaprio, a lot of people hang out there to do meditation and yoga. So I was...
Oh, you mean Leonardo DiCaprio, that left-wing hypocrite?
Oh,
that,
yeah.
The absolute jackass who thinks we all need to conserve and we all need to drive a Prius, or really he probably thinks we should all just commit suicide because, of course, humans are the scourge of the earth. Yet he has his 412-foot massive carbon footprint mega yacht. I mean, epic scumbag. I hope I never need to see another Leonardo DiCaprio movie.
He has
not that I'm on
off.
A tangent or anything. I just can't stand that kind of hypocrisy. Look, and listeners, I know at some level we're all hypocrites, myself included, okay? But give me a break. Don't lecture me about conservation and global warming when you're like one of the biggest polluters on the planet besides Al Gore, another big hypocrite. Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Naresh.
Yeah, so that's where I was in Rishikesh, and I was, yeah, pickpocketed by a monkey, and it was a girl. I could tell it was a girl. And yeah, she took my bag of chips and started eating them right in front of me.
So right out of your pocket, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, right out of my pocket. So
that was a pretty funny picture.
it was a good picture moment.
So Naresh, I got to ask you a question. Were you born in India, by the way?
No, I was not.
You grew up in Houston, right?
Yes, born and raised in U.S.
Okay, so just having returned from India, do you appreciate the good old U.S. of A. more now?
Oh yeah, for sure. Now, let me say this about India though. I know you went, Jason, probably like 10 or 15 years ago.
I was there about, I want to say, 10 years ago. I was in Delhi, and then, of course, went to the Taj Mahal and took that famous picture as if I was pinching my fingers together, holding one of the spires. And I hate to tell you, that picture that everyone takes there, it looks fake. The background looks superimposed. I promise I was
Yeah.
really there. My friend Brittany was there with me. She could vouch for me.
Yeah, well, India has changed a lot since 2006, and it's changed a lot since pre.com. So one of the things that I noticed, I was worried about working, for example, from India because I didn't know what the internet would be like. I didn't know what the amenities would be like, but that's now not a problem at all. I mean, I was in places that you would never expect there to be air conditioning or internet. Forget about the internet. But these places, they looked run down. There were, a good amount of poor people around, but they had the internet and it was very, very strong connectivity too.
Yeah, well, I mean, Naresh, seriously, really, are you? I mean, India is the land of tech support.
It is. It is.
Okay. I mean, how many times have I called, and I'm saying this in quotes, Mike, to help me with my tech problems, and he was in Bangalore or something, and it was probably 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'll tell you a funny story. When I was in India, there was an internet problem. There was like some big cable in the ocean was cut or something like that, and I had really bad connectivity problems. And it was one of the, whenever you travel on these huge long distance trips, or at least I'll speak for myself, I think probably everybody shares this experience, your sleeping patterns get really screwed up, and there's always like one night where you just can't get your clock right and you can't sleep. So I was up at about 2 or 3 in the morning and I was trying to do some work and I just wasn't tired. And so I call downstairs and said that there's like an internet problem, and they send up this guy and he's wearing a suit and he's got this great English accent. And I thought, I'm in good hands here. This is the land of tech support, right? And he sits down at my computer and does some tests and all kinds of stuff. And yeah. So I don't know. I think internet, it's not surprising that it's pretty good.
Yeah, well, when it comes to Wi-Fi, though, my guess is you were probably in a big city when this
Yeah,
happened.
and I was in Delhi and I was in
Okay.
a super classy hotel.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
Okay.
it was,
Yeah, I'm talking about
you were out in the
I was out in
rural.
yeah, in the rural kind of middle of nowhere near the Ganges River. The hotels were probably two-star hotel. That's the best you can get in that area. And again, the Even though the other stuff looked a little run down, a little older, not really 21st century, the internet was superb. It was, I mean, I was streaming movies from my computer.
So I have long said that if you want to improve the lives of humans all over the world, the best thing the United Nations could do for the planet is free global Wi-Fi internet access. And they, you might remember they had this $100 laptop program that they were talking about for years, and that really never worked out. A lot of it was because of the operating system issues, not the actual electronics. But what's going to be the OS? Is it going to be Microsoft? Everybody's going to have to pay Bill Gates for a license, And so that was sort of one of the big issues. But what's going to happen, because the UN, which is largely a pretty lame organization, if you ask me, and not completely, but they do some good stuff, but I don't know. Overall, I don't think they're that great. You're going to have Facebook and Google connect the earth. You're going to have capitalism do it. And they're going to make all these Wi-Fi weather balloons so that every point on the planet is connected. And it'll probably be free. Now, again, none of this stuff is truly free because we are selling our own information to these companies, and that's the currency by which we pay for Google and Facebook and so forth. And again, that's another argument, but capitalism is going to do it, not the UN, right? As usual, the corrupt UN
Oh,
won't
yeah.
pull it off. It'll be capitalism. But yeah, so when we talk about, I mean, the reason we brought this up, and at the risk of going on a tangent here, is that when you look around the world, and you look at the investment opportunities around the world, and everybody loves to say, oh, the U.S. is going to hell in a handbasket. And listen, I don't disagree that it's on a downward slide. I do think it is. But like I've always said, it has a long way to fall before other countries can really beat it overall. And, you know, I know the highest incarceration rate. And look, I watched Newsroom and I saw that speech that the guy made, and sorority girl got up and asked him, you know, it's famous. It's been passed around the internet a zillion times. And I get all that. I know there are huge problems and issues, but overall, it's pretty awesome. Okay. And in fact, one of our clients, Patrick, sent me an article recently, and it's from globestreet.com. And it talked about an investment conference that happened recently in San Diego for Cruttenden. That's an investment banking firm in Newport Beach, I think is where they were based. I remember Cruttenden and Roth many years ago in the 90s. They had a national real estate conference in 2016. And here was one of the great quotes by Andra Fraser from that conference. It says, Gary H. London, president of London Group Realty Advisors, says that foreign money comes here because the U.S. is this, quote, island of tranquility compared to other parts of the world, unquote. Okay? And then Andra Fraser, VP and Senior Area Manager of Zions Bank Corporation, says that, quote, the U.S. is the greatest place to place and make money, okay, unquote. And London points out that they will take a smaller return, meaning these foreign investors will take a smaller return on their money because, from their perspective, anything is better than what they have gotten. So investors are, I mean, the money is just still flowing into the U.S. Foreign direct investment. I mean, it's interesting. When I go around the world, and I've been to 79 countries, as you know, when I go around the world and I read the economic publications in other countries, the thing they're always talking about is FDI. What is the FDI? The foreign direct investment. And, you know, like the U.S. doesn't even need to talk about that. There's so much of it. Other countries need to say, hey, look, people are bringing their money here. But in the U.S., it's known, it's been known for decades and decades and decades as the Brinks truck of the world. And that's for broad investment markets. But when you look at the real estate market in the U.S., it is even better because it is such a special real estate market for so many reasons that I've outlined on the last 666 episodes. It's been subsidized by the government since the Great Depression, good rule of law, very good customs, well-developed data markets. Don't underestimate that data, the importance of data. The multiple listing systems, Zillow, Trulia, they just don't have good data in other countries as far as the value of real estate. In the U.S., you do. It's a very special market. And then very mature supply chains in terms of construction materials and repair services and so forth. It's a very special real estate market. So did you look at any real estate deals in India?
I did not look at any real estate deals. And have you ever looked at real estate in India?
Well, I mean, I guess you could always say you're looking at real estate because you just have to turn your head. Okay. but no, I did not very seriously consider India as an investment market when I was there, at least. I have certainly read about people investing in areas like Bangalore, which is known as the sort of the tech center, but not, that wasn't a real serious one. Now, I have very seriously looked at properties in many parts of Europe, Asia, Central and South America, okay, but not India. The title of this article, by the way, I just want to share, because the title in and of itself is telling. It says, foreigners who want portfolio diversification often buy stupid deals in the United States. Okay, now it didn't say in the United States, but that's what the whole article is about. All right, stupid deals. And that just means that they are willing to pay a risk premium, an insurance premium, to invest in the Brinks truck of the world, the United States. Okay? Listen, listeners, you know I have a number of complaints about the U.S., but I'm just telling you, it's all about relativity. It's all relative to what else is going on in the world, all right? So just wanted to share that. Naresh, you've got a few questions that we didn't finish up on in prior shows. Do you want to ask me those?
Yeah, sure. So going back to real estate, I don't know if your listeners remember, but we went through some ABCs, we went through some basics. Now, I think the stage that we're at is the actual buying stage. So my first question is, I hear all the time about, you know, we closed on this property or closing costs. What are all the relevant closing costs that investors or buyers should take into account?
Well, that's a loaded question. And here's why it's loaded. Because number one, closing costs vary based on geographical customs and based on the type of financing you choose for the property. Okay? So that's the first thing listeners need to understand. A lot of this stuff isn't actually required either. Technically, it's not required to do a deal. You could probably everywhere, I think, trade a piece of real estate with a contract written on a napkin, okay? You don't have to go through all of these formalities, but there's a good reason for them. They protect you, having things like title insurance. And understand that title insurance in and of itself is a sort of a complex thing, because there is a title insurance policy that ensures the buyer that they're getting good title, and then there's another title insurance policy that ensures the lender financing the property saying that their collateral has clear, good title. And by the way, since we're talking about title, this yet again is another reason that the U.S. is such a great place to invest in real estate, because the market here and understanding the chain of title is pretty transparent in the U.S., whereas in other countries, it is very opaque. In a lot of places, you just really don't know if your title is clear and clean. In other words, someone might present a claim saying that they have a claim on the property, that they have a lien on the property in other places. And I'll tell you, all my years in the business, I have never experienced a title problem in real estate here in the U.S. So, that's just an aside to what we were talking about a moment ago. And then there are other closing costs that are involved on the financing side of the property. Most of these will just go away if you pay cash for the property, so understand that. But understand that each individual lender can have a different set of charges, and then they can have different sets of charges based on the type of loan program you choose from them. So for example, if you go to XYZ Mortgage and you go to ABC Mortgage, they may quote different amounts of fees, right? And then if you go to XYZ Mortgage and say you want program A versus program B or C to do, you know, that of the different financing they offer, those closing costs may also vary again, okay? So there are a lot of federal rules that regulate disclosure of these items, and you'll get a disclosure from that lender so that you'll know what you're getting into. And any lender worth their salt, the best way to find one is, by the way, by referral, not just finding them online or somewhere. We certainly refer people to lenders that we've done business with, that we trust will take care of our clients, and they're not perfect, okay? They're just like our local market specialists. They need to be managed, okay? These things in business are things that you manage. You don't solve them ever necessarily. You manage them. So there are sets of fees, you know, loan points. Points are just prepaid interest. There are what they call, technically they actually call them this. You won't hear your lender call them this, but we call them this, garbage fees, okay? And these are, you know, like the processing fee and the this fee and the that fee. There will be an appraisal fee. So all of these costs are itemized on these disclosures that you get, okay? And then there are costs related to the actual handling or escrowing of the transaction. Now, here's a point that can be confusing to some. Remember, we started this discussion by talking about title insurance. And depending on where you're buying a property, the closing process or the escrowing process can be handled by an escrow company, a lawyer, or a title company. So the confusing part for some is they'll think, well, title insurance, there's a fee for title insurance here, but then there's also a title company who is saying, hey, I'm going to receive the money for the down payment. I'm going to receive the money from the lender for the financing of the property and then convey the deed to the buyer, right? And receive the deed from the seller and escrow the transaction. Now, in the Socialist Republic of California, for example, where I grew up and spent most of my real estate career, I do not recommend investing there, just so you know, in case you haven't been listening to the last 600 plus episodes, because it's too expensive, it doesn't work, the market makes no sense, very speculative, you know, that's for gamblers. We're conservative cash flow investors. But in California, it's easier to see the differentiation because you have an escrow company, and I used to own an escrow company, and then you have a title company. So the title fees are for title insurance, and the escrow fees are for the escrow company, right? But just understand that the title company a lot of times does the escrow as well. And in California, you can have it where it's one company doing both, but you don't always have it that way. In some other parts of the country, it's just customary for the title company to do everything. Okay, so understand that. That pretty much covers it. I mean, you'll have some little transfer fees that'll be paid to the government, maybe a transfer tax. These aren't huge. By the way, in some foreign countries, they are huge. Okay, so just understand that. But that kind of sums up closing costs. So how do we just tie this up and put a bow on it, right? Estimate about 3.5%, give or take. This is not an exact number, okay? Give or take about 3.5%, maybe 4%, just estimate on the higher side, okay, of the purchase price for closing costs. Now, you have to understand something, though. If you choose a loan program where you are buying down your interest rate with points, because points are just prepaid interest, and this may actually be a good idea. We've talked about it a lot in depth on prior episodes where we've done the math for the break-even point of buying down your rate. And if you do that, your closing costs will be higher because you're prepaying for interest. And there's a time horizon on this that is typically somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 years. So for example, if you pay 1 point, which is 1% of the loan amount extra up front, so say you're getting an $80,000 loan and you pay $800 more, but you buy down your rate by an eighth of a percent or maybe a quarter of a percent. I'm not quoting a rate here, just so you know. I'm just pulling these numbers out of thin air. I don't have any exact... I'd have to have a rate sheet in front of me, okay? I'm not doing that. I'm just giving you an example so you'll get the concept. But if you buy down your rate a quarter of a point and you pay 1 point up front, you know, it there's a time horizon, a schedule as to when you'll break even. So for example, if you break even in 3 years by paying upfront interest, then the remaining 27 years of that mortgage is a great deal for you. So it may well make sense to buy down your rate and pay an extra point or 2 points. I've seen people pay several points in advance, prepaid interest, to get a lower note rate on that mortgage. Make sense?
Okay, got it.
Next question.
We talked about closing costs. Now, when we're actually buying the property, let's say I am intent on buying numerous properties moving forward to start, I guess, a real estate career.
That sounds like a good idea.
Right.
You're going to build a nice real estate portfolio.
Nice real estate portfolio. So what kind of, I'm assuming that the best thing to do would be to set up some kind of entity you know, maybe an LLC or some kind of entity to do these real estate transactions and have it under an umbrella company. What would you recommend on that end?
Okay, so first of all, I'm not a tax or legal advisor. We have talked about this subject a zillion times on prior episodes, and I know you've heard me talk about it before, Naresh. People are always asking me this, even though I'm not a lawyer, and I'm really cannot give you legal advice, okay? I will just generally tell you from my own experience, many people jump the gun on this stuff. They just spend a lot of time trying to figure out these complicated, expensive, and cumbersome, meaning you're going to have to do a lot of paperwork and keep separate accounting, asset protection strategies, okay? And they should just buy some properties, okay? You can always do this later, but I will tell you there. This is a very long discussion, okay? With the residential real estate, when you're buying 1 to 4 units, anything a fourplex or under, rather than a big apartment complex or some other kind of commercial property, they make it pretty hard to use LLCs because the business is not set up for institutional investors, okay? Now, people do it. I own single-family homes in LLCs myself, okay? Well, I should say my trust owns the LLC, and you know, it's complicated. I'm telling you, this stuff is complicated, okay? It's harder than it looks, folks. So you really should not stress out about it. But it's harder to get financing. It's harder to get insurance many times. It adds a degree of complexity to it. If you are an advanced investor and you've got several properties, you know, listen to my past episodes where I've talked about this extensively. I've interviewed lawyers on the subject at hartmaneducation.com. The courses there, you can see where we've had lawyers speak. Renowned attorneys like Garrett Sutton, who's written several of the Rich Dad books. He's been on the show before and talked about it. You can get this where you can see him speaking at our Meet the Masters event and really learn more about it. But just understand that a lot of people are putting the cart before the horse here. If you're worried about liability, have insurance, okay? Insurance, this is the liability that comes out of owning investment property is pretty easy to insure around. Okay, so I'm going to wrap it up with that, or we're going to go another hour just on that subject.
well, one last follow up to that. So, if I wanted to get started with you guys, will you walk me through that process of, you know, setting up the? You'll just refer me to the proper people who handle all this.
We'll refer you to an attorney. Yeah.
Okay.
We got to wrap it up pretty quick, Naresh, but I think you had one more question, right?
I think we can save that for it'll probably take another 30 minutes to answer that, so we'll save that.
Okay, so I told the listeners we would talk about waiting to have kids. So this is just sort of an interesting thing, and I'll tell you why this is interesting, okay? We have such massively changing demographics, okay? And hopefully you as a real estate investor are really recognizing this. And you're recognizing the chance that there could be a very significant stock market correction coming in the near future because of the aging population and that population being required to take distributions from their retirement plans, which are mostly sitting in stocks, okay? Then that would cause a huge potential downward decline in stock prices, okay? So all of that notwithstanding, my opening talk at Meet the Masters earlier this year, was about how you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. And I just thought that this article, although it doesn't have anything to do directly with real estate, address this issue. And I tell you, folks, this concept of how you can't hear the dogs that don't bark is what creates myopia in the world, where these myopic people, they just can't see the big picture. It's terrible. We have to, in life, in all areas of life, we have to stand back and look at the interactions of things in marketplaces, in economies, in life in general, in politics, and see how they interplay together. And this article is really about how you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. And I've talked about this issue before on the show. It was my opening speech for Meet the Masters, for those of you who attended that. So let me just share. This is interesting, okay? Good News, the article, it's a Newser article by John Johnson, and it's entitled Good News for Moms Who Wait to Have Kids. Now, mostly we've heard about how you shouldn't wait too long, right? And there are certainly medical reasons for that, right? But it says, study, children of older moms are healthier and taller. Taller. It's funny that they say that. Okay, so here, I'll just read you some of the article. It says, women who wait until 35 or later to have kids face higher risk of problems, everything from miscarriage to diabetes to chromosomal problems with a newborn. But as Medical Today notes, this hasn't kept the average age of first pregnancies from creeping steadily up. Now, however, Swedish researchers are weighing in with good news for older mothers. Their kids, and this is interesting, okay? I would have never thought of this myself. Their kids tend to grow up healthier, taller, and better educated, they say in a press release. In fact, their study in Population and Development Review, that's a publication, suggests that the benefits outweigh the risk for women who delay childbirth into their later years. The reason is deceptively simple, and it's on the macro level. The longer she waits, the more improvements come along in society as a whole. So the article is suggesting that the world gets better the longer we wait, right? So bear with the example here. To illustrate the point, Quartz cites, now why are they talking about Quartz? I don't know. Did I miss something? Whatever. Anyway, Quartz, whatever that is, cites the example of a woman born in 1960 who has a child at age 20 and another who has a child at age 40. A lot of things happened in those intervening 20 years, including dramatic improvements in medicine, mortality, and education. The kid born in 2000 is much more likely to go to college than the sibling born in 1980. Now, we can argue whether college even makes sense, but that's another discussion we've had before, right? The study followed 1.5 million Swedes. Okay, this is a big study, so it has a lot of credibility, right? With a researcher Mikko, I don't know how to pronounce that name, of Max Planck Institute for Demographic Research says findings should factor into family decisions. Expectant parents are typically well aware of the risk associated with late pregnancy, but less aware of the positive effects. So look, I'm certainly not suggesting if you're thinking about having a kid, you should wait a long time, but this is interesting because you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. I mean, the world changed very, very significantly from 1980 to 2000. That was that 20-year period they were talking about. And so this older mother, and assumingly older father too, right? They have more economic resources. They can do better by their children potentially, right? They can provide them with better care, better education. And so it's just a counter argument that you just never hear, and that's why it's interesting. You can't hear the dogs that don't bark. What do I mean by that? I keep saying that phrase, right? There's a famous Sherlock Holmes episode called, I think it's called Silver Blade, where a person was murdered in the episode, and the dog did not bark. And Sherlock Holmes, being as smart as he was, realized that that was the solution. That was the way they solved the crime. Because it's the profound impact of something unseen, of something that didn't happen. And this is the problem with a political system and the world in so many ways. Because you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. You get into arguments with these people about socialism and, you know, it's ugly big brother called communism, and they'll always say things like, well, look at Canada and look at Scandinavian countries. Well, you know, we just talked about an article from a Scandinavian country, right? Sweden. They'll say, they're doing great, and they're socialists. Well, you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. The question you should be asking is how much better off might they be if they had a smaller government? That is the question of the day. Okay, visit VentureAllianceMastermind.com. Check out Venture Alliance, our mastermind group for real estate investors, and HartmanEducation.com for those courses I mentioned. And then, of course, great properties at JasonHartman.com. So three little websites for you. Naresh, I talk a lot, don't I?
Well, that's why you have so many hundreds of thousands of listeners in 164 countries.
Yeah, I know. But maybe it's why I don't have a wife. See, if I had a wife, she would have to let me talk 80% of the time. And most women, yeah, they're just not into that, are they? They like to talk more. So there you go. All right. Well, hey, thanks for being on the show again and asking some of these questions and getting down that list with us. I hope the listeners found it interesting. We'll talk to you on a future episode, Naresh.
Sounds good. Everyone, have a good day.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Happy investing. Let us know if you need anything. JasonHartman.com. We're here to help.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.